So friends, what I'm going to talk about this evening, I don't think has been spoken about in public for a very long time. And this is the whole esoteric tradition of the Friends of God. There is a spiritual tradition that there have always been a group, a brotherhood of spiritual masters in the world at any time, a certain number of spiritual masters present in the world at any given time whose work is to keep the world alive with love, aligned with love, and aligned with the energy of love as it comes into the world. Because the energy of love that is the very basis of what it means to be a human being, of what it means to be part of creation, flows from the inner planes, from the unmanifest into manifestation. How this works is one of the hidden mysteries of creation to which these masters of love have been given access. And their work is to make sure that the energy of love and the wisdom that goes with the love flows where it is needed, nourishing humanity, keeping it balanced, keeping an equilibrium between light and darkness, between knowledge and ignorance, that is necessary for the well-being of the world and for the evolution of the world. In the Sufi tradition, these masters have been known as the Awliya, the Friends of God. And according to the Sufi esoteric tradition, there are a fixed number of the Friends of God in the world at any one time. And when one dies, another is always ready to take their place. Without this group of the Friends of God, the world will become unbalanced. Things would happen which are not supposed to happen. In the Sufi tradition, this spiritual hierarchy has been described as beginning with the pole or the Qutb, who is also known as the master of the Friends of God. And at any one time, there is one pole, or pole of poles, as it is sometimes referred to. And then there are seven pegs, they are called, because this image of the pole and the pegs goes back to the time of Sufism in the deserts of the Middle East, and the whole esoteric symbolism of the tent, and the pole of the tent and the pegs of the tent that keep this covering to protect humanity, to ensure the well-being of humanity. And then, after the seven pegs come the 40 successors, or al-Abdal. This is a very, very ancient esoteric tradition. And in Sufism, one of the first Sufis to document this was the 9th century Sufi Al-Hakim At-Tirmidhi. And he's very interesting because he wrote an autobiography which is very unusual for Sufis of that time. And in his autobiography, he describes how his wife had dreams for him, which is quite beautiful. And One of the dreams she had, she saw two dignified people sitting down, and one of them said to her, "Tell your husband, his task is to give strength to the weak and to be their support. Tell him also, you are one of the pegs of the earth, and to you is assigned a section of the earth." Because according to this esoteric tradition, each one of the friends of God is assigned a section of the earth to look out for, to look over. And it is said that if that friend of God does not look at that section of the earth once a day, troubles happen there. And of the Alalawi, or 40 righteous men, a Talmudi writes, "It is due to them that the inhabitants of the earth are guarded from affliction. People are protected from misfortunes. Due to them, the rains fall and the crops grow. None of them ever dies unless God brings forth another to replace him. They never curse anything. They never cause harm to those beneath them. They never regard them with arrogance or contempt. They don't envy those above them, and they don't have any desire in the world." Now, this tradition of the Al-Alawi, the friends of God, is not some esoteric mythology, not just something that is found in books, but a living reality. They have always been here. They always will be here. We need them. And what is interesting is at this time, at this juncture, we need to know that they are here with us. Often, they are hidden. Sometimes, they have made themselves known in the past. There is a tradition that Plato was the pole of his time. But there is also the whole esoteric tradition that those close to God are hidden, so they can do their work without being distracted, without being noticed, without being recognized. They can do their work invisibly, because the friends of God work primarily on the inner planes. As I said, there is this place on the inner planes where love comes into the world, where power comes into the world, where wisdom comes into the world, where knowledge is given to humanity. And it is here that this brotherhood of migrants who keep watch on the world and for the world do their work unnoticed, undisturbed, bringing the love where it needs to come, ensuring a certain balance is kept, a certain harmony is kept, however it might appear on the outer world that we don't have harmony, we don't have balance. You know, it is like this tradition or this reality that a child has a guardian angel. And I've often thinking, seeing my own children grow up, they have to have a guardian angel, otherwise so many disasters would have happened to them. So many times they were almost run over, so many times some tragedy almost struck, and somehow something moved them out of the way at that time. And the guardian angel of a child is a living reality, but it is invisible, it is hidden. Although some children see their guardian angel, see this figure of light who stands at the foot of their bed, who watches over them. And just as each child has its guardian angel, so does humanity have the friends of God. They are always with us. And as I say, for the most part, they are invisible, they are hidden. Andrew translated a very beautiful passage of Rumi, in which Rumi writes, "But not everything is meant to be visible. There are many advanced saints in the world who live in union with God. And then there are those even further on who are named the veiled ones. Those who live in union are always praying, 'Please God, show me one of your veiled ones.' As long as their whole being is not on fire of longing, or as long as God intends, however hard they look, they will not be able to see anything. As for those other whores of gnosis who claim effortlessly to see, know, and understand everything, how can we begin to take them seriously? The most holy are nearly always hidden, hidden in cloud of humility and divine protection. How can anyone see any of them without their or God's will?" We are so addicted in our culture to what is visible, to what is tangible, to what we can see, to what we can read about. We have forgotten the whole tradition of that which is invisible, just as we have almost forgotten the existence of the inner world itself. And to have a spiritual, not only just a culture, but a spiritual culture that has forgotten the existence of the inner world, that is a strange state to have arrived at. God keeps what is most precious to him hidden. And yet, we need to know it is there. And that is what I want to explain this evening. There is a lovely story of Ibn al-Arabi, the great 13th century Sufi master, when he was in Fez. And he met a Sufi called Al-Ashal, which means literally the withered, because he had a withered hand. Al-Ashal. Because he was a foreigner, he didn't even belong to the place. And he never said much. But after Ibn al-Arabi had been in his company a number of times, without knowing his spiritual station, he had a vision in which it was revealed to him that Al-Ashal was the pole of the time, the great spiritual master of the time. This man whom nobody noticed, this Sufi, he was very learned in the Quran. But nobody talked to him very much. Even when they discussed important spiritual matters, he was kind of left in the background. And after Ibn al-Arabi had this vision, the next day he was invited to somebody's garden to meet with a group of Sufis, and among them was Al-Ashal. And nobody talked to this man, but during the conversation, the topic of the pole came to be mentioned. And Ibn al-Arabi said, "My brothers, I am going to tell you some amazing things about the pole of your time." He then turned towards the man who during his sleep had been shown to him by God to be the pole. And this man said to Ibn al-Arabi, "Say what God has revealed to you, but do not reveal his identity." And strangely, that was the last time Ibn al-Arabi ever saw this great master. He then kind of vanished. And these masters have always been with us, watching over us. Like I said, like a guardian angel watches over a child. There are, of course, strict laws on the inner planes about what is allowed to be done and what is not allowed to be done. Just like the guardian angel is not allowed to interfere with the real destiny of the child. And these masters, of course, know these inner laws, or they live according to these inner laws. It doesn't mean that humanity cannot be saved, is not saved from certain disasters, because certain disasters need to happen. There is, for example, a Sufi tradition that if God wants to destroy something, he puts it into the wrong hands. It's very simple. But somehow, even spiritually, we have been living in too narrow a horizon. We have forgotten about the help that is present. Yes, it is all the help of Allah. It is always the grace of the Beloved. It is like when the Sufi prays, we say, Beloved, help this person if it is your will. Always we surrender to the Beloved. But there is a need now at this time to know that there are these spiritual masters with us, helping us, guiding us. These spiritual masters and their disciples, because each spiritual master is like a sun around which certain planets go. As a master and the disciples that are bonded in love to the master, bonded in love and the service of the heart. Because these masters are here in service. For the Sufi, servanthood is the highest state. It is said, after the state of union with God comes the state of servanthood. After dissolving in God, after returning to the nothingness, to the emptiness, to the dazzling darkness, one comes back into the world of forms to be of service. And yet, an essential part remains behind in the formless world, creating a connection, a link of love between the invisible and the visible, between the created and the uncreated. And this link of love is like a bridge across which love can flow, can be guided, can be shared, can be given out where it is needed. Each time a soul cries towards God, love is given to that soul. How is it given? There is a whole energy structure of love woven in the inner world. That is part of the whole esoteric mystery of the fact you don't find a teacher finds you. There are pathways of love and light around the world. There is a whole energy structure woven out of the prayers of mankind and the aspiration of those who look towards God. Each time your heart cries towards God, light goes up. And each time the light goes up, it attracts the light to come down. This is the whole wonder of light upon light. Allah guides to His light whom He will. And we have forgotten that. We have forgotten our whole mystical heritage. Even when we do the practices, even when we look towards God, we are so alone. Even if we have a teacher, we are so often caught in all the struggles and dramas of having a teacher, of our projections and our difficulties, and what is it all about anyway, and is it true and is it false, and we end up just with ourselves. And we need to reclaim our mystical heritage, to connect to this whole web of light and love and power and beauty that is woven around the world, that has been woven so carefully, according to the need of the time and the place and the people. It is woven out of the hearts of those who love Him. It is woven out of the fabric of devotion. And it is here to help us. It is very beautiful. It is like a fabric of love that is around the world. It is on the inner plane. And we need it. We are so lonely. Even in our spiritual practice, we are so lonely. We struggle. We try. We aspire. But what can we do on our own? What can we ever do on our own? We are just caught in the patterns of our own isolation, in the thought forms of our own self-identity. And yet, there are those who are here to help us. And not just help us individually, but help us as a whole, because these friends of God work with the whole of humanity. We may have a teacher, we may have a spiritual path, we may have a group that supports our aspirations. And if we have found such a thing, we are blessed, because it is through that the grace flows. And without His grace, we cannot take a single step on the path. But there is, behind that visible container, a much greater container that is dynamically alive, that is responding to the need, to our need. And we have forgotten about it. It has even become lost in the storybooks of the past. And we need to reclaim this part of our mystical heritage. We cannot do it on our own. We are being asked as mystics to take a step to help humanity at this time of transition. But how can we even know where to take a step? And yet there are these pathways of love that are there, waiting for us to become attuned to them, to work with them. So this whole fabric of love and light and devotion and prayer and grace can become present, can become visible, as it used to be visible long ago, before the attention of humanity became solely fixed upon the physical world or on the mental world. It all depends where you look, but we have forgotten to look. We have forgotten to look for so long we don't even know what it is we have to look for. We are, even when we are sincere, we become so identified with our own spiritual progress, we end up looking back at ourselves. And of course, then we will just find ourselves, this small little ego that looks for something else. But we are part of something so much greater, and this is our heritage. And it is alive. And it needs us. But how do we find it? Well, again, this is one of the forgotten mysteries of spiritual life. We don't find it. It finds us. I don't think spiritually you can ever find anything. I remember once, a few years ago, waking up in the morning with this saying, which I knew was of tremendous significance. And I've only now, years later, begun to understand it. And the sentence was, "He who was lost has been found." And I knew when I heard that a whole era of my spiritual life had come to an end. And it wasn't that I had found anything, but I had been found. I was lost, and then I became found. We need to allow ourselves to be found, to be rediscovered, to be invited back into the circle of lovers of God, into this mystical brotherhood of those who love Him for His sake, not for our sake, who aren't interested in self-advancement, becoming anything. The true Sufi is he that is nothing. But it is time to somehow draw the curtain back of this very limited spiritual horizon we have created for ourselves. This limited picture of our own spiritual path. and to become aware of this whole interconnected pattern that is there, like those beautiful Islamic mosaics, of those woven patterns that come together in starbursts and then go off into octagons or hexagons. They are, of course, esoteric diagrams of the underlying energy structure of life, which is so beautiful, like a snowflake. Each moment unique, each moment never to be repeated. As it is said, he never reveals himself in the same form twice or in the same form to a different person. Each moment is unique. Each moment will never happen again. But there are also moments when things come together. And if we can grasp them, then things can become visible that were never visible before. And the friends of God are waiting for us to work with them. Whether we ever come to know them on the physical plane is irrelevant, or maybe not totally irrelevant, but it is not fundamental. That is why so much Sufi teaching is done in the night when we are asleep. It is said then, the king is not in his castle, the prisoner is not in his cell. I always love this story of the great mystic Al-Halaj when he was imprisoned. And the first night, the guard came to the cell to check up and saw the cell was empty. And the second night, the guard came to check up and found neither the prisoner nor his cell. And the third night, he came to check up, and there was Al-Halaj sitting in his prison cell. And he said to Al-Halaj, "What has happened? The first night I came, you weren't here. The second night I came, the prison wasn't here. And the third night I come and you are back in your cell." And Al-Halaj said, "Well, the first night I was with God, so I was not here. The second night God was here, so neither I nor the prison cell was here. And the third night I came back so that my destiny might be fulfilled." And for me that is always the mark of a great Sufi, that he came back so that his destiny might be fulfilled. When he had the freedom to dissolve in God, to be lost in the dazzling darkness and the nothingness from which no news returns, that he said, "I return for your sake." And the friends of God are here in service to humanity. That is their purpose. They are not here for their own spiritual well-being. They have no interest in their own spiritual well-being. They have walked the path to the end and come back again. They have become lost in God. And something remains so they can be of service here to us. And we need them. And we need to come together to share this mystery of our own spiritual heritage, this belonging together, like there are many different Sufi paths, traditions, rays of love present in this room. And these currents of love come together. And when different currents of love come together, a whole tapestry of love is created. And there is a moment when it can become visible, when it begins to hit the spectrum of consciousness that is not just for the elect, but for those who look towards God, for anyone who looks towards God. Because for so many people now, they look towards God and what do they see? Emptiness. They see their own despair, their own aloneness. Maybe they see a book. Maybe they find a tape. But what is that when there is a whole luminous world of light that is coming closer to them? that needs us to live it. Like Ibn al-Arabi said, God evolves through man. We are part of the mystery of his self-revelation, of the revelation of love to itself. We are part of the becoming of love, but we cannot do it on our own. We can struggle, we can do exercises and pray and cry. But we were never meant to do it on our own. Humanity was never meant to take any step on its own. That is why the friends of God have always been here. That is why the great ones have always been behind the scenes of life, helping, healing, bringing love where it is needed, bringing understanding and wisdom where it is required. Never making themselves too visible, otherwise their glory would astonish people too much. They don't usually hide necessarily in far-off mountains. They don't need to. There is nothing, no greater way to hide than being in plain sight. Because people don't see. They don't know how to look. They are always looking for something, and the great ones are nothing. This is something so simple. We look for something. We look for radiant light. But the great ones are simple human beings who have passed beyond the doors of existence into the abyss of non-existence. And you cannot see what isn't there. But they can be used. And they are working together. This is the beauty of it. They are working together because on that level of reality, everything is one. I mean, everything is one on every level of reality, but it's not so accessible. The oneness on this level of reality is more hidden. Because you need to know that you are different from the person sitting next to you, otherwise it can be very confusing. But they need us to take a step towards them. They are waiting. They have created with such care and dedication and devotion a container of love for humanity to take the next step in its evolution. It is done with such care, so delicately, with tremendous power, with a power that can never be made visible, because it would upset all the power balance in the world. What we think of as power in this world is so trivial. It's so incomplete. It is just egos fighting shadows and shadows fighting egos. Real power is something else. It is like the story of Solomon and the gnat. When the gnat came to King Solomon to complain about the west wind. And the gnat said to King Solomon, "You know, I have a right to complain, because whenever I am minding my own business, along comes the west wind and blows me miles away." And King Solomon says, "Well, that sounds a good complaint, but in all good judicial things, we have to listen to the other side." So he said, "Call the west wind." So the west wind came, and the gnat was blown far away. You see, the great ones love us. They love us because they are love, because they are part of his love for the world. And yet they cannot ask anything. They can only wait. They do their work and they wait. Because they respect always the freedom of the human being to turn away from God. This is one of the great freedoms given to mankind, to turn away from God. I remember once I was in a waiting room in Seattle Airport, in a change between flights, and you know those crowded waiting rooms, and everybody, half people were on cell phones and reading newspapers and talking, and Everybody's a bit frustrated because they don't know if the plane's going to be on time or not. And I had one of those momentary awarenesses when a veil was lifted. And I saw that everything was God. Every person was just full of God, completely, from toe to the top of their head. They were full of God. But I saw that that was not the mystery. The mystery was not that they were full of God, but the fact they didn't know they were God. They didn't know they were full of God. They were sitting there talking on their cell phones, reading their newspapers, not realizing that they were God. That was the mystery that we have forgot. The mystery is not that we are God. That is simple. That is obvious. Everything is He. All is one. There is nothing other than God. How can there be anything other than God? Of course everything is God. Just like everything is the will of God. But we have the right to forget it. That is His greatest gift, the gift of freedom. That is His gift to humanity. We are allowed to turn away from God. Nothing else in creation can ever turn away from God. The bunny rabbit, the pussycat, the fish, the stone, they can never turn away from God. Every cell of creation constantly sings the praises of God. His name is written on every molecule, in every atom, and even in the spaces between the atoms, is engraved with the name of love. Otherwise, the whole world would fall apart. Otherwise, the glue, the gravity that keeps us all spinning around the center would fall apart. And in a moment, there would not even be dust. And in a few seconds, all the memories of humanity would dissolve. Everything is always alive with the song of truth. But He gave this gift to humanity, the ability to forget it. And so the great ones, they are here. They can never forget. They have passed beyond the gates of remembrance, beyond the gates of forgetfulness. They are who they are. But they can never impose onto a human being, because that would deny His gift. But they are allowed from time to time to remind humanity of what it is all about. And there are certain moments in the cycle of humanity when the worlds come together. And this is a very rare occurrence. Mostly the worlds are kept separate. The physical world, the emotional world, the intellectual world, the world we live in from day to day, and the inner world, the invisible world. There are actually guardians at the gateway between the two worlds to stop too much knowledge being given to humanity at any particular time, to stop too much light flowing down that might blind us to our purpose. You see, we have even forgotten the structure of the inner world. We are so caught up in our everyday duties, even our everyday spiritual duties. But there are these times when the two worlds come together, when things that were not before allowed to be revealed have the potential to be revealed, when the names of God become visible. At the moment, it is just dimly, it is just a possibility, it is just a potential. If you knew what it meant for the names of God to become visible in this world, your heart would explode in joy. It would be like paradise. You would know instantaneously why you are here. It will become visible. You wouldn't have to look around in the dark anymore. You know, we are like the story of Nasruddin when he was looking around outside of his little hut, searching in the ground, and a neighbor came by and said, "You know, Nasruddin, what are you doing?" And he said, "I'm looking for my keys." And the neighbor said, "Can I help you?" And Nasruddin said, "Yes, of course." And so they both looked around in the dust, and then after a few minutes, the neighbor said, "Well, Nasruddin, where did you lose your keys?" And he said, "I lost them in my house." And he said, "Well, why are you looking out here?" And he says, "There is more light out here." We are looking in the dark, in the dust, for our forgotten selves. And there is a doorway opening, which only occasionally, every few centuries, is allowed to open. It is a moment of unbelievable grace. It is a moment when many things that were hidden can become known, when many of the secrets of humanity can become accessible, not just to initiates who have passed behind the veils of creation, but to all those who look towards God. The moment you turn your attention away from yourself and back to God, a light is given to you. This is written in the book. This is part of the law of creation. That is why it is said, if you walk towards him, he comes to you running. This is the whole mystery, as I said, of light upon light. Light rises towards light, and light comes down upon light, and it is light upon light. The moment you turn your attention back to the source, back to the beloved, back to truth, away from your limited self, you are given a light. And the more you look, the more you aspire, the stronger the light is. And at this moment, what is so beautiful, what is being given, is that if you use that light to look and know what to look for, you can see this web of light and love that is around the world, that is waiting to help humanity to take this step in evolution. And at the nodes of this energy structure are the friends of God. This map of light and love that is woven around the world, at certain points, the energy lines come together, just like in those Islamic patterns. And at each of these nodes, at each of these places where lines intersect, which is a place of power, the power of love, because love is the central core of the world. There is one of the friends of God. And they are speaking to each other on the inner world, always conversing, always in communication, because it is a flowing river of light and love that is waiting for us to work with it, waiting for us to become aware with it. If you could just imagine what it means to work with the energy structure of light and love that is the fabric of the world in which we live. The fabric of the world is not this visible, tangible, physical dimension. Oh no, friends. That is just a reflection of a reflection. Even the most beautiful thing in this world, the most beautiful butterfly, is just a reflection of something so wonderful.